Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands, skies and waterways and pay our respects to elders past and present. We pay our respects to the world's oldest continuing culture.
Hi there. This is Pano Apostolou from SBS Greek Radio. Belinda is a solo mother and Stathi is planning to become a solo dad. I invited Belinda Payne and Stathi Vanvoulidis, both from Melbourne, to share to us their experiences being solo parent, or try to become solo parent, the sperm donor conception, the IVF procedure, and the hardships of surrogacy. Belinda and Stathi shared with us a great insight for a lot of people who don't know much about the issues that we mentioned above, or for people who are thinking of doing it and following the same steps as these two beautiful souls. Here is the chat I had with Belinda and Stathi at the SBS studios in Melbourne. First of all, thank you very much for coming to SBS Greek and accepting our invitation. You're here with us today at Melbourne Studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
First of all, I want some details from you. Are you from here? Are you from Melbourne or from somewhere else? And what do you do with your life right now?
So originally I was born in Sydney 41 years ago and moved to Melbourne when I was around 8 years old. I was raised by my mum. She was a single mum, not by choice, but when I was two, we left my father. So then we moved to the south coast of New South Wales, so around Eden, Maroombula, and then we moved to Melbourne when I was about 8 years old.
How was Melbourne? Did you feel the difference comparing living in a different state and living in Melbourne? Was it an easy growing up in Melbourne? Was easier?
It was hard initially because I didn't know anything else. When my mum said, "We're moving," I was crying and saying, "No, I want to live here." And my grandparents were there, my auntie and uncle, all my cousins. It's all I ever knew from when I was 2 years old. So I was really not okay with moving, and obviously living in a really small town like Eden. It's a very, very small town. Moving then to Melbourne, and we moved to the suburbs, like the eastern suburbs. So, you know, it wasn't the city, but it was still, it was quite hard to transition into like a different primary school and make different friends and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember initially being like a little bit unsettled. It was sort of hard to make friends at the start, but then, you know, as time went on, obviously I got used to it, and I couldn't imagine now living in a small town like that. And there's very limited opportunities in places like that, but I still love going back and visiting down on the south coast.
When you decide that you want to become a mother,
I have wanted to be a mum since I was about two. Grew up playing with dolls. I was obsessed with baby dolls and prams and nappies and all the things that, you know, little
stereotypical
girls.
Stereotypical, all this.
Yeah, very stereotypical. People say don't stereotype, but I was obsessed with, you know, baby dolls, and I loved baby dolls till I was like almost a teenager. Like I always, but, and I loved like, you know, giving them bottles and pretending to feed them. And like I even though at that age I wouldn't have said, "I'm going to be a mum when I grow up," I just know that it was always something that I wanted to have, like deep down.
You were embracing the idea from very young age.
Yes. And having sort of different little relationships here and there, I kind of came to a point where I was like, I actually don't want to have a partner, but I want to have children. So how am I going to be able to do that? And that was one of those things where I went, you can do that. So when I was in my mid-20s, I actually did go and see a fertility specialist. So I think I was around 25, 26. And I wanted to ask more information about it. And looking back, I wouldn't have been ready at that point because I was just still quite young. But I wanted to know more information and know that that was something that I could do. And even though I didn't go ahead with it at that age, it was something that I was like, okay, you've got all the information now. And when you're ready to go back and do it, you can. So I think it, for me, it wasn't a wake up one day and think, I want to be a mum. It's something that I've always wanted. And people would say, oh, you know, do you want to have kids one day? And I'd say, nah, because hurt too much to say I do. And then I didn't want other people to feel sad for me. So I just used to say, no, I'm not going to have kids.
Like, were the people telling you, this is the correct age to have a kid because after when you become 30, I mean, it will be more difficult for you, you know, like women, I mean, all these things, you know. And you, how was your family with all that? I mean, how was your friends? How did they react when you would try to, or you started to think to be a solo mom?
When I first went and saw the fertility specialist in my 20s, I knew that that was probably a better age to start because obviously for women, our fertility starts to go down sort of after 30, but by 35, it drops quite significantly. For men, for you guys, you're lucky. You get a lot longer than us. We don't get as long as you guys, unfortunately. I actually didn't tell anyone when I went and first saw that fertility specialist. That was just something that I did privately because I just wanted information for my own. Like, I wanted the information just so I can put it in the memory bank and go, okay, this is what we need to do. I decided to go ahead with an appointment at the end of 2019, so right before COVID. And I think I saw my fertility specialist, my first fertility specialist, at the start of 2020, and I was 36. So I told people that I was going to do it, but I didn't tell everybody. It wasn't a public thing. It was just my close friends and family. And when I told my mum, I actually cried and I said, this is what I'm going to do. And she was really supportive. She was great. I didn't think she wasn't going to be. It was just a very hard conversation to have. Yeah. And my mum and I are close, but not that close that we tell each other everything. It's weird. We have a good, like a really good relationship though. But my friends were like very supportive. Everyone was like, oh my God, that's so, like, it's so exciting. And it's always that really naive start to IVF when it's so exciting and, you know, but everyone was very, no one ever said to me, oh, you know, tick tock, the clock. But I knew that at my age that I needed to move pretty quickly.
Did you think about also like the money, how expensive it was? Was it expensive?
Yes. It is very expensive for women going through it solo. Obviously, it is a really big expense. Okay. And so I did have to look at that and think, okay, well, can I do this? And, it, you know, finances is something that I looked at. Being on my own, it was something that I paid for on my own. You can actually access super. Some people take out loans. I never did any of that. And I know that that's coming from a very grateful position. And I was very fortunate to have the finances. But I know that there's a lot of solo mums that don't, but there are other ways to do it as well. But definitely that came into play as well. Because when you go through it, they're like, oh, okay, well, a round of IVF is, let's say, 13,000. That's about the ballpark figure.
Yes,
you get some of that back on Medicare, depending on your situation, but you still have to come up with that money straight up. Like, you have to pay that money straight up.
When did you have your first positive results?
When I started IVF, I went through two rounds of IUI, which we'll just call that the glorified turkey baster. That's basically where they just put the sperm in.
Yes.
It's not an IVF round. So to be eligible for a Medicare rebate, you have to do two rounds of IUI. And then they class you as, I'm using this loosely, medically infertile. You're not, but on paper, that is what they class it as. If you've done two IUIs, you can then move on to IVF and have the rebate. So I did two IUIs, I think June, July of 2020, both didn't work. Then I moved on to IVF, and actually the first donor I chose wasn't Starthy. It was somebody else. So I did, the IUI donor was a different donor, and then I moved on to IVF, and I said to them, I want to use the same donor that I used to IUI, and they said, you can't. And I went back and forth, and we argued about it, and I said, that's my donor. I want to use that donor. I had his toddler picture. That was the donor I was using. I was, that is my donor. And they said, you can't. He's not available for IVF. You can't have him.
Yeah.
And so they said, you need to choose another one. So they sent me the list of donors. And at this stage, this was July, August, there wasn't any donors that were suitable. They were either didn't sort of gel with the profile, or there was health issues, or they were, you know, there was a lot of Asian donors and Indian donors, which is amazing for women who are of that nationality, or for women who might want to have children with a different, like a different ethnicity, or that look different to them. That's completely fine. For me, that wasn't something that I was wanting to do, because I feel like,
understandable,
you know, you have to kind of educate those kids on where they're from, and I didn't feel like I was sort of the right person to do that. So I had to check every day, like multiple times a day. I was refreshing this thing. It's like a, it's kind of like a Tinder type situation. And I'm refreshing. And then one day, I think it was around maybe September 2020. Yes, 2020. It was around September and I refreshed and there was like four new donors and I went, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I quickly just looked at them and the profile that I now, Starthy's profile, I pulled it up and you don't get any names or anything. No. You just get a photo, a baby photo, I think it's a toddler photo and all the information. It's got like height, build, eye color, ethnicity. I was like, oh my God, he's Greek. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, but he's Greek with auburn hair. How cool is that? And then, you know, it's got like why he wanted to be a donor. He said he loved musical theater. He talked about his family and I didn't read it really in depth, but I read it enough to just lock it in because at this point sperm donors were in such short supply and such demand. People were literally snapping them up seconds after they came up on the database. So that was how I locked in.
So there is a deficit of donors.
There definitely is. I would urge anyone who is thinking about donating, especially if you're under 40 and you want to donate, there is definitely a shortage of donors in Melbourne. I mean, I haven't accessed the database, obviously, since that time, but I think there's still pretty much a shortage, yeah.
And the baby?
So that was 2020. I went through my first round of IVF in, I think it was October maybe, and I said, I don't want to transfer any embryos. I want to freeze them. I'm not ready. Mm-hmm. So I got three embryos and I froze them and I did nothing with them. Then 2021 came around and I did a transfer. I don't remember the exact timeline of these. I think it was like sort of mid-year and then one towards the end of the year and then another one the year after. But the three embryos that I had frozen didn't work. My last transfer of those three was in February of 2022. And my specialist said to me, we're going to do another round. We're just going to do it. So March 2022, I did my second round of IVF and I got one embryo. I got one embryo and my specialist said to me, it's a beautiful A-grade embryo. Let's just see what happens. And hopefully he's an obstetrician as well. And he said, hopefully I'm catching your baby in 9 months. And I never had a positive pregnancy test before then. And yeah, I got to day six past transfer. And my friend said, I just think you should do a test. I think you should do a test. And I did a test and ran down the stairs going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And that was my first positive, March 2022.
When that happened, did the donor got a notification? No.
Mm-mm.
So then you first had the baby after 9 months.
Yep. So my son was born in December 2022.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the donor gets a notification to say there's been a baby born. I think the month and the gender.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
Yeah, Starthy, when did you get notification? How did you feel?
Exactly as Belinda said, that you just get non-identifying info and you're told that there's been a successful birth from your sperm donation. And I was just happy that there was a healthy child out there, that my efforts as being a sperm donor helped a family. And I was like, that's great.
You were a donor since when?
Melbourne IVF started in 2019. But it was a long process to be a donor with Melbourne IVF. So by the time my profile was available to people who were accessing it, there would have been, I think, maybe 3 years of medicals and psychologicals and follow-ups after 6 months. So it was a very appropriately thorough process.
Why did you decide to become a donor?
Because I knew one day I was going to need a surrogate.
That's simple.
I was putting out the positive energy, but also, yeah, I've seen people use IVF and seen the beauty and joy of how it's helped people who were capable, willing and able to be beautiful parents, but for some reason related to genetics or their circumstance, they...
You are an out and proud LGBTQI person. Did that create any issues with your family, especially with your family, because your background is Greek and we know how all of us were more or less connected with our religious beliefs or the some conservative traditions and things like that.
Can be pretty dramatic, yes, of course, but I think they were more concerned when I moved out of home than when I came out or told them I'm a sperm donor. Like every person and in all kind of facets of life, it was just an educational experience. And initially, they didn't believe me when I said I decided to be a sperm donor. They thought I was pulling their leg, like the time I told them I met Brad Pitt. But as things started progressing and as I got notifications and especially with where we're at now, like I think that education process of of them seeing not just me coming out to them, but also them now seeing like fertility journeys and how people can help others have families and what this means for people out there. And
so you mean there is a lot of stories out there that makes the whole general like society to be more
accepting
and have the acknowledgement and also,
And so we need those stories, and those stories aren't just, I think a lot of people think, oh, IVF, it's only for certain types of people. If you're infertile, you go through IVF. It's like I've never had a fertility issue. I just don't have a womb. So as a solo, single, gay man, I need the IVF world in order to have a family. And there's heterosexual couples who can't procreate for a myriad of reasons who also rely on IVF. So it's not just the gays and lesbians who use IVF. It's everyone.
In his profile, did you know that he was a gay man?
Yes. Yeah, so he actually put that in there. And I'm very heavily involved in the dance industry. So the majority of my male friends are gay. So I'm very in that world of, you know, so we're very used to it in our household with, you know, the majority of male friends. Actually, I think most of my male friends. It's not the reason I chose him. I appreciated the honesty. I appreciated that you were confident enough to share that information. I liked that.
Did you have the option not to reveal your orientation, sexual orientation?
I'm trying to think now whether there was an actual drop-down box or whether it just came into a free text open field. I think I would have talked about it in a free text open field response that maybe asked me about like my life history or why I'm doing it as well, because I've constantly referenced the fact that as a solo, single gay man that I will be needing the IVF world, which I'm going through now. So I would have made mention of that in my profile for sure.
You wrote a big letter that went with it. It was like an attached letter that went. It was like 2 pages long. It started with Yasu.
That's good. That's cute. Now you've got a healthy boy. Is that correct? What's the name?
His name is Theodore. That was because I wanted him to have a great name, because I wanted him to know his heritage, and that was important for me. But we call him Teddy for short. Some people call him Theo. That's okay if he wants Theo, but I feel like every second Greek person is Theo at the moment. So I wanted to him to have that name that relates to his heritage as well. Starthy actually contacted VARTA, which is the central registry in Victoria that manages like donors and donor conception. And it's actually about to be taken over. The whispers are it's about to be taken over by like Victorian Health or something.
Like the government.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure the ins and outs. I hope that doesn't happen, because it's actually a very good resource, especially for donors and for solo parents and for any parents that have used donor.
So it was actually Starthy that wanted to meet you guys, yeah?
Initially, I got an email from VARTA saying, we need to talk to you. And I've panicked thinking something's happened, or I was actually overseas at the time. And I contacted them and they said, look, your donor's actually requested identifying information, as in, I think it's the child's name and date of birth, maybe. Mm-hmm. And she said, you don't have to if you don't want to, because it's actually up to the mother or the parent. And she said, you don't have to. And I thought, it's okay. I'm very open about the fact that my son's donor conceived. I'm very open with other people, and I'm very open with him, even though he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
He knows that we talk. You don't have a dad. You've got a donor, and that's different. Mm-hmm. I actually forgot to sign the consent form, and then they followed up and said, and I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then we just had a lot going on. And then I sent back the form. And then I think within like maybe 2 days, I had an email by giving permission for the information. It then can open up an email portal through VARTA between us, so they act as like the middleman. And so Starthy wrote to VARTA, then it ended up being an email to me as well, just talking about like family and saying that he was so happy that he's been able to help a family, and he's really just grateful that there's a healthy baby and all that kind of stuff, and that he loved the name. And then I went back, and then he came back again, and then I went back, and it kind of went back and forth, and then it just got really messy through VARTA, so we just decided to just say bye-bye. And the Carrie was amazing. She's such an amazing lady at VARTA. She helped us a lot. And then we started talking back and forth and talking about everything, family. And it wasn't even really about Teddy. It was more about just us. Nice. And it's so funny because we've connected now as solo parents, which is like it's just so, it's like fate has such a funny way sometimes. And we did that. And then I knew he was coming back to Melbourne and I thought, I actually really want to meet him, but I don't want to be pushy. And he was never, ever, he never, ever was pushy. Everything was always, if you want to, even this interview today, only if you want to, you don't have to, you know, all
and
that kind of stuff.
For and being here
you're welcome.
With us. What did you learn from her experience, from Belinda's experience? You want to become a solo dad. Are you learning something from the whole experience?
A lot.
I mean, are you sharing things? You're sharing all these details.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're both pretty open people. IVF, surrogacy, solo parenting, sperm donor, nothing needs to be or should be treated like it's a dirty little secret. And I think some people have that view of that. Like, I know when I met Starthy, there was a few people who said to me, I don't know about that. And I said, well, it's not your life and it's not your child. So you do whatever you feels best for you, but this has no impact on you. You just have to do what's best.
What did you learn from her story? I mean, what was the most precious, you know, advice that you got from?
Because reaching out to Varda, I obviously, healthy, happy kids, that's number one. But I was starting my fertility and surrogacy journey and I wanted to connect with others who had gone through those journeys and having Belinda and learnt how many parallels and even in the two interviews we've just done, the way she's spoken about wanting to be a mother, I remember the moment I wanted to be a father and the way Belinda spoke about how sometimes you don't have luck in relationships but I always wanted to be a parent. I'm like, that's my word. So it's been such a kind of really beautiful, serendipitous opportunity to meet. It's almost like I'm meeting like my mirror opposite and then the fact that we're connected through the IVF journey as well is just a really beautiful thing.
What was Theodore Steady's reaction when he actually met the donor?
Well, we met at a cafe. Starthy bought his mum as well, but he didn't tell his mum.
Courageous, very courageous, Starthy.
He didn't tell his mum until like 5 minutes before my mum and I got there.
Yeah.
Because apparently you can't tell Greek people like a long time before. He's still little, so really he's just happy if anyone talks to him, you know. I can't remember what he did. I think he was just waving and
he was really
chilled and he is an eater. Like he eats and eats. Like he's definitely half Greek. He just sat in the high chair and ate his food and he really likes Starthy. I think sometimes kids know. They know. And then we've been over after that and been to Starthy's family's house and things like that. And he's very comfortable with the whole family. And he's a little boy who's very sensitive and he's quite reserved. He's not a loud kid that's like into everything and he's quite reserved. So if he gives you smiles and laughs and claps, you know that he loves you. So,
second last question. Yeah. Are you sending him to Greek school at some point?
Don't do it.
I've been asked about that. I don't know. Do I need to?
Greek school was some of the most like horrific Saturday mornings of my life.
Well, back in the 90s,
waking up at 7:30 a.m., you get no sleep-ins.
Well,
it was just like a six day of school.
My mum really wants to take him to AusKick when he's older, so that might win.
Yeah.
She's a mad Collingwood supporter, so that might win over Greek school. I would love to take him to Greece. I would love him to, like, learn Greek. I essentially just got this instant family, and it's, like, they're just an amazing, incredible family who I know is going to have his back now, and it's just beautiful. And it's not a relationship that's, like, of any expectation. It's just, like, if our doors are always open and
your mother, how is she feeling?
She loves it. She really loves it. She's been very involved.
What's
in
your
all
mom's
this
name?
Her name's Meryl.
Meryl.
Yeah.
How about your mother?
Oh, she's ecstatic and like so happy because.
What's her name?
Connie. Costantina. Yeah, yeah. She's so happy because, you know, a happy and healthy child out there is always like the most important thing. But also knowing that it's so close to like me having that as well. Because mum knows that I'm trying to get pregnant now and that in 9-10 months, this could be like my reality as well. And I think what I mentioned earlier about it, like being an education process, like when I first mentioned to the family that I was a sperm donor, I think everyone just goes to those horror stories. Everyone's seen the Oprah episode. Everyone's watched the Four Corners episode. And everyone just thinks, oh my God, you've got like 700 kids out there. This is insanity. I'm like, no, not every story is like that. And that's why it's important to have these voices and the positive stories out there, because it also helps others out there who might be thinking and, you know, leaning close to pursuing their own journey. It's like, do it.
What do you say, Belinda? I mean, you've been more involved, you know, as a solo mother. I mean, it wasn't that easy, but What do you think? Would you do that again?
I think you go into it with this, like, oh, it's going to happen. Like, it'll happen really quickly. And then I think, as Starthy was saying before, from what I could understand, it's a roller coaster. It's like, yes, I got embryos. No, they didn't work. And then I have to do it again. And then I would do anything for Teddy. Would I do it again for him? Yes, I would. I don't know if I'd do it again now, but I would do the whole thing over again if it meant that I could have him, because he is just the most beautiful boy. He's just such a gift. And I think, like what Starthy was saying before about his parents and stuff, I think that seeing Teddy has given them hope for Starthy as well, because essentially that's their baby and that's given them hope for him as well. And I think that that's really important, but I would do it all again in a heartbeat for him.
For the potential solo mothers, any piece of advice, what should they avoid in the whole procedure?
At the end of the day, you do need to look at financially. Can you do it financially? It's not just the IVF costs. It's can you raise a child, especially with the cost of living these days and being on your own? Are you in a position where you're going to be scraping together to make ends meet? And of course, there are families out there that have to do that, but you're choosing. So they need to remember that. So I always say, you know, if you can do it. And there is a lot of government help out there. There's a lot of payments for single parents, and there's, you know, the parenting payment, the Centrelink payments, and there's a lot of childcare help and things like that. So you can do it, but you need to make sure you're prepared for that. You need to be prepared mentally for IVF, and you need to have a support system. If you think that you can go into IVF without having anyone around you, it's not going to happen.
So your life in the last 19 months is completely different?
Completely different. It's changed, like... And for any solo mums that are thinking, I really want to do it, but I don't think I can do it by myself, you can. You can do it. You do, like, my mum is such a big help. She's amazing, and she helps so much with him, and she looks after him a couple of times a week, so I can do things, and I'm very blessed to be able to work a lot from home, so I don't have to go into a job, so I get to spend all my days with him doing activities and things like that. But even for mums who work full-time, you can do it. There is childcare available. There is lots of things available. People say to me, I don't know how you do it on your own. And I say, I don't know how you do it with someone else living in your house, because honestly, like, I'd rather be on my own. But I feel like I'm not on my own at the same time. Like, I am a solo parent, but I've got beautiful people around me who support me so much. And Teddy just has so many people that love him, and now a whole nother family that loves him. And, you know, he's been taken in like their own grandchild, really. So, you know, it's been beautiful. My biggest advice is make sure you have your support network. And if you're having doubts about that you think you can't raise a child on your own, you absolutely can raise a child on your own. I was raised by my mum from the age of two, and I think I'm all right. I mean, I'm a little bit damaged somewhere, but I'm all right.
Like all of us.
All of us are damaged, you know, and do your research, you know. Don't go onto Facebook and use donors that come to your house, and go through a clinic. I mean, there are people that have done that, and that's their business. But for me personally, I couldn't do that. There's just so many legalities around that, whereas when you go through a clinic, you are protected.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, it's very, very different. There's a lot of people that do that because they can't afford IVF, but check all of your finances and even, you know, you can apply for, as I said earlier, you can apply through Super, even if you wanted to do a loan. But my advice would be definitely go through a reputable clinic. So
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Raising a child, there's always risk. But then there's some risk that you can control, and that's where it's like, why add extra risk? And that's the advice that I'd give as well. And I know people who have joined Facebook groups, and even after doing that show a few years ago, I had offers anonymously through Messenger and Instagram saying, oh, I'll be your surrogate. And part of me felt a little bit kind of concerned that a complete stranger through a text message like that would be like, as if this is going to progress organically. There are clinics out there, and there are systems out there that have some safeguards, more safeguards than you would have otherwise, and use those systems. And I think, like most things, it's progressing in the right direction. So hopefully in 5-10 years, it will be even easier. Like now, even being able to access your super, and more things are going on Medicare for fertility treatments. Like, yeah, there's things available to people out there.
Thank you very much, both of you, for taking the time to share these beautiful things with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Κάντε like, μοιραστείτε, σχολιάστε, ακολουθήστε μας στο Facebook, στο SBS Greek.